Welcome to episode number 46 of Divergent Paths with Dan Dunford. I think it's 46, 40-something. Who knows? Doesn't matter. It's in the 40s somewhere, but thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I hope you enjoy this episode and all of the episodes that have come before it and all the episodes that will continue to come after it. Happy post 4th of July. Hope you're dealing with your hangover well. And if you're... I don't know if that's coming across, but there's still some fireworks going off in the background, even though it's 2 in the morning. I don't know. Whatever. So, this week, back to the weekly schedule after that weird... Man, it's been a strange couple weeks with dealing with the podcast, but this week's guest is a band leader, a saxophonist, and a composer. Her name is Laura Andrea Leggia, and I have heard her ensembles play a couple different times at one of the venues here in the city. And was just really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, I know people who play in her groups, and I really had a blast, the times I've gone and seen her ensembles play. So I decided to email her, and she was nice enough to get back to me. And so we sat down and had a conversation and had a lot of fun, and both were kind of crazy. it was no big deal. She'd been awake for 15 minutes when we did the interview, and it was great. And we had a good time and talked about a lot of fun stuff. I'm always very happy when my interviews are less like interviews and more like, you know, just hanging out and talking about music. And this one definitely goes a lot more heavily into the conversation side while still being an interview, much more like a conversation. And it was really fun to talk to her about her own music and her ensembles and how she writes her songs. You know, we had a really good time. So I hope you enjoy it. If you want to hear what she does, she performs regularly at Zinc Bar with her ensembles, the Afro-Peruvian Orchestra and the Gabriel Alegria Afro-Peruvian Sextet, which is will be touring in the fall. So look up the sextet on Facebook to catch those dates. And if you want to hear her trio play, you can catch them at Zinc Bar when they do their Afro-Peruvian nights, or you can go to any of a number of private events that they do, or email her and email someone and hire them. I don't know. Just figure it out, and listen to their music. It's good. Featured on today's episode are two tracks from an album from Laura entitled Saxophone Criollo, which apparently means Creole saxophone, which I'm cool with. So prior to the interview and underneath the first few minutes, will be a tune called Ava. And on the end will be a delightful little song called Mariposas, or which I see means butterflies. So, man, it's embarrassing. I feel like a horrible person considering I live in a neighborhood that's, where the predominant language is Spanish by a huge, huge margin, and I know like 10 words of Spanish. It's really embarrassing. I should work on that. But anyway, I hope you enjoy the music. I hope you enjoy the episode. And I will talk to you next week. And if you like the episode, subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher, Google Play Music. Leave a review. That's helpful for me. Another exciting thing, I will be launching a YouTube channel here in the next week where you can find all of the interviews you know, they're not video, they're not actual, those will not be actual videos, but they'll be audio, all the audio versions of the interviews will be up on YouTube, and I will be putting up content that will be YouTube exclusive that will not be on the podcast, so keep an eye out for that, and I'll probably start promoting that a little more heavily in the upcoming weeks. Hey, it's the summer, you know, gotta branch out since I have the time to do it, because hopefully in the fall I won't have as much free time. Anyway, leave a review on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and I haven't really said this that often, but which is bad on me, but thanks to Katie Geringer for providing the theme music for the podcast. Her song Slow Down opens every show, so check her out as well. Anyway, enjoy the interview.
I dreamt that I drank coffee.
It's mine.
I don't like coffee.
I do.
But I dreamt that I drank coffee and it was delicious. It was great.
It is good.
There was a storm coming. I don't remember. Like a black storm approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And on TV and all the news coverage was about the deluge.
And you're like, coffee.
And somebody gave me coffee and I went outside. And then I couldn't find my way back because everything was dark. I had quite a dream. And then I woke up at 5 till 10. I was like, oh, Dan Dunford is probably looking for me.
Yep. This is true.
You want to start?
Yeah. What?
How does this go?
All of this has been recording already.
Oh.
I started. I surprised. It's all about the surprise.
It's probably not good to podcast my dreams.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, you know. Probably not, but
I would listen to a podcast with people just talking about their dreams.
You know what? Actually, I bet.
And getting their dreams interpreted.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know, but I'm gonna go ahead and say.
You
probably.
Don't know, but if I can think it, it probably exists. That kind of thing.
See, the thing is like podcasting jumped had this big boom, and now everyone, not so much of the music community, but in a lot of comedy. There's a lot of fields, tech, there's all of these podcasts, all these people do their things. Ooh, A Night of Dreams. Well, that's not anything. Maybe not. Maybe there's nothing. Maybe I didn't search for it right, but... Oh, there we go. No, that's about sleeping. Flash of Spirit. That sounds like it's about dreams. The problem is you can't be, specific about it. Because, if you type in dreams, it could be, achieve your dreams. And not, what do your dreams mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, you do like jazz and stuff, and it's awesome. And
that's a great intro to the interview.
Yeah, no, it's cool. You know, you kind of mix, and there's other countries and stuff, and you're not from America. This is what. Honestly, you should let me write your bio, and it would be really great.
This is great. Because all the other stuff is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm serious.
Yeah, it's just.
Sometimes they ask me, could you please send us a 300 word bio? I'm thinking, 300 words? What am I going to write about?
Well, I mean, I guess they want you to be I was.
Born.
I was on this thing, and I did this with these people, and so and so thinks I'm cool.
Right, yeah.
I think
so-and-so is cool. Is that
important? I rode the train with Branford Marsalis once, and that was a thing.
Oh, there we go. Found it. Dream Talk Radio. It explores dreams, consciousness, and society.
I want to go because I dream so much.
There you go.
And I have cool dreams.
There's 62
dream interpreting.
There's 62 episodes.
Wow.
And they interview people and then they like talk about dreams.
Is that
stuff.
A lot? 62. How many episodes do you have?
I think number 45.
All right.
Well,
depends on how
often you release it. I release them once a week. It's like every 2 weeks. Some people it's once a month.
Mm-hmm. So you've been around for a little less than a year, like 11 months.
Yeah, last August.
Cool.
And it was just a thing. I was like, now I know enough people. I've been here long enough. I know enough people. I can do this now.
Mm-hmm.
And like the biggest part is like finding people. But
cool. Well, if I come up with somebody, I'll let you know.
Do that. But actually, we should talk about music and stuff.
Yeah.
So
yes, there's jazz.
So what you do is this kind of Afro-Peruvian
big band,
and you have several smaller ensembles that you're part of, and you do mm-hmm. your own saxophone playing with other yeah. groups, not just your groups.
Yeah.
Right. So with that, I'm going to assume you didn't form fully. Like come out of nowhere and just like live in West Harlem. So, what is your background like as far as?
Well, I grew up in Peru. I am from Peru, and I was there until I was 20 years old.
Mm.
So I played the saxophone there, and when I was there, I also played classical flute a lot, classical flute and piccolo, when I was a teenager, and then when I graduated high school. I really wanted to be a musician.
Well, where did that like initial, why did you even start
playing?
Like, yeah.
Well, I started playing when I was a little kid because we had a pediatrician who was really cool. And I had a problem picking up things when I was like 2 or 3 years old. So I like to pick up the stick. This is not going to play out on radio, but instead of picking it up like this with my fingers and, just putting it in the air, I would have to drag it across the table onto my other hand. And then use a pencil like this.
Weird.
So I was in preschool, and I was learning to read and write, and I could still not draw anything. So the pediatrician said she's gonna need therapy, so maybe you should have her learn the recorder or the piano. So I started playing the recorder when I was like 4 or whatever I was, and my brother too. My brother was a year older. And then in the same place, it was like a family of music teachers. So we started playing piano and we took ORF lessons. Then my brother quit because he became a soccer player. But I kept going. Then I got to be 11, so I quit because it wasn't cool anymore.
Yeah.
And my mother sold the piano.
Mm. Wow, that's drastic.
I know. She said, if you don't practice, I'm going to sell the piano. And I said, go ahead, sell it. And she said, I'm going to sell it. And I said, go ahead and sell it. I didn't think she would actually sell it.
Right.
One day I get home, she sold it. So well. It was kind of shocking. And I think it didn't take 2 months before I started missing it and practicing the school church with the piano there. It's just, all kinds of sad things. And then a band started in middle school.
Mm.
Like unheard of. We don't really have... At that point, schools in Peru didn't really have instrumental music a lot. At least my school didn't. We had choir in my all-girls school. We didn't have band. So all of a sudden this band started. There were only 13 instruments available, so spots for 13 girls. And so I tried out and I got piccolo. And so I started playing piccolo, and then the next year I was playing flute, and the next year I was playing saxophone. And I...
Isn't that like reverse of the normal progression?
I think so.
Isn't it like most saxophonists are like, I should probably play flute because...
Yeah. I know. No, and piccolo, what the hell? Who starts in piccolo? I'm sure it was a joy to hear me as it, like...
Oh. Your mom was like, I wish I could sell the piccolo.
Yeah. Piccolo's not yours. Ha! And then instrumental music, an orchestra started in my brother's school. Because there's a boys' school for every girl school, you know? Like,
that makes sense.
People who send their girls to girls' school have to send their boys to boys' school. So my brothers went to this boys' school, and me and my sisters went to this girls' school. So so all of a sudden, four of us, there's five of us, I have four siblings. The oldest one is too old to, you know, do any of this stuff. she wouldn't have caught on with that, you know? But, like, you know, we were 12, and my little siblings were 9, so... So all of a sudden, four of us were practicing different instruments in the house. And the neighbors would call and say, Chico, Chico's my mom, we love your children. You know, we just love that they're developing their artistic capabilities. They're so creative.
But also, shut the fuck up.
Is it okay if, you know, she just doesn't practice her clarinet before 7 a.m.? The flute is okay, though. The flute is all right.
Just... Not the... Ouch.
Yeah.
Burn.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's like, okay. No, we had lovely neighbors, too. So then by the time I was graduating high school, I played the saxophone, and because of the way things are in Lima, I was already gigging, you know, in New York. And
yeah, right. Well, what is the music scene? I mean, what is the musical culture like in Lima? I mean, And I guess in Peru is, I mean, Peru's not, like, it's a big country, but it's not, like, a huge country.
Lima is a great city to be a musician in, honestly. Mm. Like, it's kind of a, whenever I go back, I think, why am I in here?
I could.
Yeah.
Like, you're well, like. Why are you in here?
I know, right? That's a good question to answer. I've actually thought, you know, that's one of the things that one thinks about for years. When we were in New York, you're like, why am I in New York? You know, the gigs in Lima pay the same or more. There are more of them. And the rent is, you know, at most a third. So why am I in New York? But yes, if you want to go to Lima, and you're a trombone player, right? Mm. Yeah, you should take a nice little vacation to Lima, and the plane ticket will pay for itself in a week.
Nice.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And you'll find a place to stay. So there's gigs, there's, you know...
But wait, I mean, what's, like, the dominant, you know, are we talking, like jazz clubs, or, like, you know...
Well, there are salsa gigs, and there are jazz gigs, there are wedding gigs... There are quinceañera gigs.
Yeah.
There are first communion gigs. There are...
Man.
But people still
hire live music. I need to be getting those first communion gigs here in New York.
Well, people still hire live music down there.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, like for me, whenever I do private gigs in New York, it's usually the Peruvian community. Quinceañeras and weddings and, you know...
That makes sense. Yeah. If you establish right. yourself in that...
That's true, yeah.
In that circle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I'm in New York. Like, a lot of people, you know, I have this conversation with my friends often enough about why we're in New York. And it's just because it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to, like, well, you're not going to move here because...
Because you're going to make money, no
yeah,
way.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's, you might not, but there's the possibility of making a lot.
There is not. There's really?
Like, I mean, sure. Like, or at least a lot compared and being around people that you wouldn't be around. Like,
that you know, that is a possibility.
I don't know. Like, I'm a trombone player. There's like a, if I work hard and, you know, I do, there's like a decent possibility that I'll make a really good living doing a lot of cool stuff that I wouldn't be able to do
somewhere else. That is true, yeah.
Like, I might be able to make the same living somewhere else, but it would be like, teaching a bunch of rugrats, and who wants to do that? Kids are stupid. I mean, let's be honest. No.
Yeah, I was never a kid.
So, like, well,
scrap that whole thing about the piccolo.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like I said, you sprouted fully formed in West Harlem with saxophone in your hand.
Yes.
how did you end up moving here?
Well, so I decided to be a musician. It was this, like, you know, decision you make when you're 16. Like, yeah, why would I do anything else? I was already making a living, you know?
Yeah. At a certain point, like, you put so much time into it, like, the time that you put into that is more than the time you've put into anything else, so
it'd
be a lot of work to try and do something else.
But also, I think it just becomes such a strong part of your identity. Like, who are you if not a trombone player? I guess you have... I mean, I don't know if you think of yourself that way, but, like...
Yes and no, like, but I took... I had a couple, I had, like, in particular, one very, like, intense gap year where I basically didn't play at all.
And how, know, the, after, how did that feel, you know?
Well, I mean, I had a full-time job and that I liked, but, mm-hmm. I mean, after a year, I was like, yeah, well, that I mean, in some ways, that was really great.
What was your full-time job?
Oh, I was in the Navy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Doing podcasts?
No.
Playing with Ramon?
No.
All right.
Spying on people. It was great.
Oh, nice.
Sort of. Anyway. Probably shouldn't say that when that's like, this will be on the internet forever. But
I had a full-time job for 3 years.
Yeah.
And it just became part-time, like I told you. I needed to pay off student loans, which was a total mistake to get student loans to like go into the arts.
Oh, yeah. Well, you went to NYU, right?
I went to USC before I went to NYU.
Oh, man, even better.
I know, yeah. Okay,
well, we can get to that. Like,
okay,
how did you end up in the States?
Okay, so I'm 16, and I play the saxophone.
You look really great for 16.
I'm such a mature 16-year-old. I was 16 in Lima, gigging, deciding to be a musician. My parents threw a fit. At that time, they still could. So she was like, you're not going to be a musician. You are going to college. Pick a college. If you're not in college, you're not enrolling in the conservatory. She found out that I was applying for the conservatory because she was at the mall, and this other lady from school was like, chico, ¿cómo estás? ¿Cómo está Laura Andrea? The girls are so stressed out. They're all practicing for their, you know, the equivalent of their SATs. Mm-hmm. We don't have the SATs there. We have an individual exam for every college you want to apply to.
Oh, God.
So they're all studying for the Primera Opción for the Catholic University. And I'm sure that Andrea will ace it. And my mom was like, of course she will. Mm. She's been practicing so hard, too. She gets home and she's just, you know, Laura Andrea. And I told her that I was actually preparing for the conservatory exam. Mm-hmm. And she was like, what? And I told her, you've been paying for it. Like, I've been asking for money every week. She's like, that's what that was for. So I picked a college. I picked the Catholic University because it was really close to the conservatory. So this is how 16-year-olds make decisions. So to all 16-year-olds out there...
It's for the music, man. It's all about the music.
I salute you with your immediate decisions. So after a couple of years of doing the college and the university, I got offered a job teaching at a school, saxophone. So I quit the college and I was just teaching and doing the conservatory. But the conservatory was classical.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to learn jazz.
I mean... There's not that much work for classical saxophone players.
Yeah.
There's like 4 gigs.
There is 4 gigs. And the classical teacher was great. I mean, he was...
I mean, they're like... Or soloing. Like, these guys are so good and there's just like no jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, it's hard enough to find jazz gigs. Imagine finding classical saxophone gigs.
I have a really close friend who finished... who did a couple masters up at NEC. He's a classical saxophone player.
Uh-huh.
And like he legit had to like completely throw himself into new music, the whole new music scene, because there's just nothing else.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do jazz particularly. I mean, he's good, so he can like blow through some big band standard big band charts, and like he can do that really well. And he plays flute and clarinet, but
He plays flute and clarinet because my classical conservatory professor frowned upon me doing any flute or clarinet. It was gonna mess up my embouchure.
Well,
you know,
it used to be a thing where like trombone, I read lots of things about trombonists being like, don't only play one, only play tenor, only play bass, only do one of them, because switching back and forth will fuck you up. And then all like everyone in New York does everything,
of course.
Like,
you
have to just to keep your head above the water.
It's the nature of New York.
Yeah, and then it creates all the things where you're like, well, that person's not as good on this one as I am. Stupid. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, gosh. I don't have one, because most saxophone players in New York are just as good or better.
Well, no, it's...
No, actually, that's one of the reasons to be in New York, because everybody has such a high level and so high standards for themselves. You know, everybody's great at... Like, you know,
I would
good
like
readers, good blowers. you know, if they don't know clarinet, they learn it.
Yeah.
I just got this clarinet. This little hipster-looking
boxer
is a clarinet.
Well, it looks like one of those like suit briefcase record players. They sell at Urban Outfitters.
I know, but it's an actual clarinet, and it had... Too bad this is not like a film thing, because you could film this thing. It's a clarinet from the 50s or something.
That's awesome.
It belonged to this lady who lives in Wisconsin, who's like 70-something.
Nice.
Yeah. She hasn't played it for over 50 years.
It still works?
I think... It doesn't sound so good on me, but I don't know if it's me or the clarinet.
That's the problem.
Yeah. I think I probably need to try another clarinet.
So,
or the clarinet needs to try another clarinetist.
Oh, aw, sad.
That's all right.
So you're teaching and studying classical saxophone.
Right. So I remember one day I was at a rehearsal, and they were talking about the gig that was the next week, and they had a sound check at such and such a time. And, like, does anybody have a conflict for a sound check? And I raised my hand. And so while somebody else was talking about their conflict, I thought, my conflict is that I have to study for a philosophy 203 final. Why?
Yeah,
that's
a good question.
Why is this a conflict? Why am I saying I can't come to this thing because I have to study for this final that I'm really, you know, I'm only doing this so that they will allow me to go to the conservatory. But then I thought, but the conservatory is only like $15 a month. Because that's what that's what public school costs in Peru.
You're giving me more reasons to leave New York and move to Peru.
I know. And that's voluntary, the $15, by the way. So I just, you know, I had my hand up and then I was thinking about it. And then I was like, no, screw it. I am dropping out. That's when I made up my mind. And then the next week was all the finals for that semester. I still took some of the finals. But I was so afraid of getting roped back into the thing that I, like, you know, I was thinking, should I flunk these so that they won't take me back if they make me come back? Like, you know, the things that you think when you're a teenager, it's crazy. It's like, nobody can make you do anything. But, yeah, so, like, I told, like, I just wrote complete gibberish in like some of these exams. I did well in the math one because I liked that class. So nobody could make me go back to school. And then I thought, okay, so now I'm a musician. So now what do I want? I want to play jazz. So I have to get out of the country. I have to go to the United States. So I applied to several different schools. I went to the most expensive one because, again, that's where I don't know where my head was at when I was a kid, man.
Well, like, you don't really think about
the risks associated and your own capacities.
When you're 16, you're not going to be like, oh, student loans are going to be crushing me for 30 years of my life.
No, you think, I'll get a full scholarship by second year, and, you know, by then I'll be getting
because you
teaching.
Could totally re-audition for more money. No one,
yeah,
no
and,
one gets
and you know what?
Money.
If I make a living here, I'll make it in L.A. and in New York, and, you know, I'm great. So that's what I thought. So I moved to L.A. I went to UC. It was a good school, but it kicked my ass. Financially, especially.
Yeah. But like, there's like football and stuff, so that's cool.
And you're right.
Like,
and I didn't
and like
even
the campus is
that.
Like in that like is well, I mean USC is like the one school that where the campus is downtown LA basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's awesome, and there's all this cool stuff, and there's all these great people there, but it is super fucking expensive.
It's super expensive, and at the time there wasn't a lot of stuff to do there. I mean, it was LA, but I didn't realize, for example, that you needed a car. I didn't know how to drive. So I learned to drive. I bought a car. That's another expense. It was just crushing expense. Mm-hmm. You know, all that I remember from USC is like how... The other day I looked at my transcripts because I enrolled in some classes here at City College. And as I was looking at my transcripts, I was thinking, I just had all these memories about like working so hard just to pay for things and like... So then...
I mean, but did you get like... Did you get what you wanted out of it musically? Like, was it worth it?
I think I did, but you know what? I got a D in jazz composition. A D? I got a D in, like, I was thinking about this 10 years ago. This little motherfucker gave me a D. You know why? Because he had an attendance grade.
Oh.
And at the time I was touring, I toured 5 weeks out of that semester. But I still got good grades in all the other classes because I talked to all the professors and they understood the situation. And even the history professor, you know, gave me the exam out of the regular cycle. And I, like, you know, hauled ass studying and practicing. And this guy, even though, I'm pretty sure I did all the assignments You know, it was four big man arrangements, blah.
Yeah, I'll fucking do that in my sleep.
No, I mean, it's still hard.
It's
but hard, like,
but it's not like... Yeah. I mean, it's hard, but it's not like...
Yeah, but now I do, you know.
Now you could do that.
Now that's what I do. I don't... I don't want to talk about it. But yeah, so it's interesting what I got from that experience. And then I got married. I married, I think you know, Gabriel Alegria, a trumpet player from the bands that I play in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved to New York. He got that job at New York University. We're divorced. We got divorced in 2011, I think. 2012, maybe? I don't know. But we're still friends and we play together a lot, you know.
That's so weird.
You think? I was just talking about this to a friend the other day. I think it's weird that people don't stay friends. Because you have this long relationships. And this person knows you better than anybody else.
It just depends on the person. You know, it just depends on the people, like, involved. Like,
right, yeah.
You know, if you're able to have, a reasonable conversation, but how often are you, like, when emotions are high and you're angry or whatever, like, how often are you going to really have a reasonable conversation?
I think like, it's lucky that we're both reasonable people too.
Yeah, I mean, and
like I don't think we ever had a shouting match in our whole like, and we've known each other since I was 12, so over 20 years.
Yeah.
So we still work together. So we play the Afro-Peruvian Sextet. I write part of the music for that, and I've been in that band for over 10 years.
Mm.
And then he conducts the Afro-Peruvian Jazz Orchestra. Although that might change because I think I might put him in the trumpet section and just have no conductor. A lot of bands have no conductor, I've seen.
Yeah,
so.
Or, I mean, so you moved to New York because
he got that job. Yeah.
Okay.
So for a while there, I was on a spouse visa, so I couldn't work.
Oh.
Yeah. So then I finally got my green card and I got a job.
Mm-hmm.
And we split up. We still play together. So now I'm in Harlem.
So, like, throughout all this time, I mean, if we're talking about, like, the music that you write and mm-hmm. the stuff that you play,
the way that I got that master's in jazz composition at NYU, somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere in there, like,
yeah.
I mean, you talk about, like, oh, man, USC was so expensive, so you moved to New York and picked the most expensive school in New York, too, like, it's...
No, but it was so much less expensive than USC, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't...
Yeah, because it was a master's degree.
Oh, yeah. That's...
And I had a bigger scholarship for it. And it was a short period. It was only a year and a half. And the workload was easier. And I was already, like... I had this business taking students to Peru.
Mm.
So I should start that back up, actually. taking student bands to Peru. So I would take a big band there, and so I would arrange the travel, and I would arrange the gigs, and I would arrange, like, going to Machu Picchu, and then going to dinner. Like, all these things that people do when they tour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people take student trips places.
Yeah.
And then, like, they hire a travel agent, and the travel agent only arranges the travel things, but doesn't get gigs for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these high school bands going to Europe, and, you know, spending 10 days looking at touristic things and not playing a gig. So these bands would come to Peru and they spend 10 days there and they do tourism in the morning and then gigs at night.
Mm-hmm.
And they're high school kids, so they have all the energy in the world. So they, you know, party all night afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would do that. So, you know, financially it was easier. So I had more time to practice. And on top of that, it was cheaper. So
with your own, like, compositions and the stuff that the music that you write and, mm-hmm. and perform, especially in New York, but you know, other places too, because of the vibrant communities as far as like different, when you've got like my neighborhood, it's all Puerto Rican,
yeah,
Washington, you know, like 90%.
But here I walk down 20 blocks and it's jazz. Jazz.
No, hold on. let me continue my point.
Yeah.
You know, in Washington Heights, you got heavy Dominican, and different parts mm-hmm. have different things, and that like infuses itself into the jazz culture in New York. There we go. That's where I'm going with that. is there a Peruvian neighborhood in New York? Is there a place where everyone lives?
There's a Peruvian neighborhood in Jersey. It's called Patterson.
Oh.
It's a big party.
Oh, I didn't know that. I see the signs for Patterson.
Patterson with one T, yeah.
Yeah. Paterson.
Paterson, yeah.
But
oh, that's lovely. Yeah, I guess when you have a single consonant after a vowel, it can have a long vowel sound. Yeah.
So, there's different Hispanic communities, infuse their own, the music from their country into jazz, and it becomes part of the lexicon in New York because of all these things. So what, how do you take your own, the music, the rhythms and things that you glean from your own background, how does that melding work for, within your own compositions and when you're thinking of putting stuff together with your own band?
Yeah. I figured this out when I was in California, that there is no effort in doing fusion. There is no really added, because I remember thinking, how do you put together this and that? But as I was doing compositions for the composition class, I realized after 3 or 4 weeks that everything I wrote was in 6/4 time or 3/4 time or 12/8 time, And then it was a problem, after a few weeks, the professor actually said, hey, can you bring in 4/4 next week?
Yeah.
Make sure that you write something swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah, because when you as a trombone player, especially as one who kind of came from my background, also more classical, when I started doing big band gigs and jazz stuff, people having to tell me no, don't,
yeah,
this is the Latin jazz genre, don't swing it, you'll be fine, just do this instead.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh,
yeah.
I never really thought about that before, because it just all was oh, it's all jazz.
And I remember my saxophone teacher in California trying to get when I play, I do this a lot. And when I listen back to recordings, it's not as annoying as I think it is, but I have this trill, this style where I trill in the way that I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a nervous tick. I do it all the time. And it sounds different from the bebop trill.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher there was trying to get me out of my Andean trill into the bebop trill, and it's a tiny little detail, but it's like having an accent.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody has an accent, you don't ask them, how'd you get your accent?
That's fair. That's a good point. I didn't even, it's completely different because my, the stuff I listened to when I was growing up and then the stuff that I got into, it's all jazz from the American side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very specific because you start with that, the 30s swing sensibilities, I know that really well. Into the bebop and as jazz developed, but it's a very American thing. So when I look at it, it's how do you add in this? But I guess from the other side, it's how do you, why would you add in this? Or how would you add in the American side, the American jazz idiom? Into what you're already doing in a weird way. No? Does that make sense? I got lost. I think I turned myself around. I think I got myself lost. I do that sometimes. I talk myself around in circles and then I'm like, where did I come out?
You have a nice voice, so it's all
okay. Right. I'm just going to keep going. It's fine. I'm not going to cut any of this out because it's important that people know that I'm stupid.
And they don't have a picture, so.
yep, awesome. Because I'm the question I ask is how do you add in your music to what Americans do? And it's it's more the other way around. It's you already have your language.
Yeah,
it's more people are asking you to do what the Americans do.
I don't know, because when I got to USC in California, the goal was to learn to play jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that there was a huge gap between where I was and where jazz was. And it wasn't so noticeable when I was in Lima, because everybody has that problem in Lima. We're all soloing on jazz tunes and we sound completely apart. We're playing the tonic all the time and we're playing we're not swinging. So I tried really hard to learn that language.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came out of that experience realizing that I had a different style.
Yeah.
And so I started my trio where I just played Peruvian music and my own compositions, which kind of sound like Peruvian music, with just cajon and guitar. And so that trio gigs like little gigs and restaurant stuff, and when we're in Peru, weddings and quinceañeras and the occasional funeral.
Oh wow!
Actually, we've never played a funeral. I'm lying, but I know people that have played funerals.
It's like all these joyous death.
There are people that play funerals, and it's a good. I mean,
it's great. It pays money.
Yeah, and the and
sucks
the,
for them.
And
but...
the booze is great. I mean, people break out the good booze for funerals.
That's dark, but I like it.
My grandpa, I'm going to tell a story about my grandpa.
Yes.
My grandpa, when he was getting older, he collected all this like nice whiskey, which is hard to come by in Peru. Like, people would travel and bring him by a nice bottle of something. And here you can buy Blue Label at any liquor store. Frickin', it's expensive.
Yeah.
But there you actually can't. At least not back in the day. So,
That's kind of like what it is, like the liquor stores in my neighborhood. You can buy all the cheap stuff and that's it. Like,
but not all fancy
like,
stuff.
You can, like the most expensive bottle of wine you can get is like a $18 bottle of wine.
That's sort of where it used to be. Yeah. Like, especially in the town where my grandparents lived in Peru. They live in Trujillo. They lived in Trujillo. So my grandpa is having heart problems, and so he feels his pressure going down. And he's, you know, Laura, my grandma's called Laura too. Laura, I think I'm going, you know. And my grandpa has a sick sense of humor. So I think I'm going, you should really call the doctor, or just call the priest, call someone. So my grandma goes to the phone, calls the doctor, says, Doctor, Gerardo's going. His pressure is, it's 40 over whatever, 30, minus 20.
I don't know how hard
over
pressure
pi.
Works, but yes.
I don't know.
Exactly.
So the doctor says, give him a shot of whiskey.
Really?
Yeah. So, because we're it's going to take us too long to get there, so why don't you just give him a shot of whiskey? So my grandma goes to the cabinet, cracks a bottle, pours a shot, gives it to him, he has a sip, and soon enough his pressure's back to normal.
Yeah.
And so she pours him another one just for good measure. And he asks her, Laura, this is really good stuff. What did you crack open?
Oh no.
Oh, I opened that bottle of,
whatever
you had. I was like, Laura, I was saving that for my funeral.
Oh man.
Don't touch those anymore.
But so doesn't he want to drink it? I mean,
so now people save the good stuff for the funeral. So take those funeral gigs.
Yeah, well, if I got offered more, I would do it all the time. I would totally be down for funeral gigs. Like, hey guys, if you want to hire, trombone can be so sad, and I'll bring.
No, it's a celebration. People who get music for. Well, why are we talking for funeral music?
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Sorry. You started your trio.
Started the trio, and I had always thought about having a big band play. I had always thought about it, but who writes for big band if you don't have to? Like, I don't know. It's a big undertaking to just do.
I think it's like it's the same thing. Like I always thought about this. Like it's just. As a trombone player, like you don't get to play in front of an ensemble very much, right? Like,
right.
So, like I always have wanted to, growing up, and even when I kind of got away from that sort of thing, like it's like, oh, it'd be so cool to play in front of an orchestra.
You need to put together your own orchestra, and that's a drag.
Well, but the same kind of thing, like you want a big band, like it's just cool because like you. You learn how to write these compositions for big band. It's part of getting a degree in jazz composition. But even apart from that, like a lot of the greatest musical statements in jazz over the past 120 years, let's say, 100 years, you've got these big bands that have paved the way for. And maybe their leaders went off to do their own, smaller things or did other things, but they all started in a big band or they had their own band, and that's how it goes. So why wouldn't you want your own one,
Yeah, exactly. So, I think you should have this podcast with Arturo Farrell if you haven't already.
I haven't. I'm working my way through these younger band leaders in New York.
He's so inspirational. Yeah.
I'm just gonna go straight to the top. I'm like, fuck all these guys. My next band leader. I'm just gonna talk to Maria Schneider, and that's gonna be it.
She's wonderful to interview as well.
I'm sure.
Such a gleaming soul. She's beautiful.
Yeah. She's also wouldn't talk to me, but
she wouldn't. What?
I email people out of the blue. Like people have booking agents, and it's a pain in the ass to deal with them.
Oh, sweetheart. Okay. So Arturo was at the gig last night. Actually, I played a gig last night, and then he. What was I going to say about him? Oh, he's a friend of the sextets.
Right.
So, and he does this thing where he gives composers opportunities to write for his big band.
Yeah.
And that's a really generous thing, because running a big band is expensive and time-consuming, and if you're, you know...
And he has a really good band.
Yes. So like, and he gives people the space to have their music performed by his band.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something, you know, it's like somebody just giving, you know, who gives this away?
Right.
And he does this once or twice a year, I think, where he gets outside composers to write music for this... new music festival he does with Latin American jazz. He's also, you know, even though he has his own thing, he creates a space for Latin American composers to do like Afro-Colombian, and not just, you know, he does Afro-Cuban, so like now he also does Afro-Colombian and Argentinian and Brazilian and Afro-Peruvian.
It's I grew up in the South, right? So the only Latino population, Hispanic population that I was familiar with were Mexicans, right? And that's, you know, that's one specific thing. But like when you grow up in the South, like, and it's not, I'm not, I don't want to say it's like someone's fault or anything, but like you kind of just assume it's all like the one same thing. Like,
well, yes,
the all these different countries have the same musical language. And then moving to New York, I was just like, oh, what? No, there's like very specific differences. Like, so it's really cool to have like someone putting out like, no, this is this thing and this is this thing. This is this specific voice. It's just, it's exciting for me because I just, it means like new stuff for me to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a new source of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And with the United States specifically, it's like you know, growing up in Peru, I know that you guys have things like lockers and cheerleaders and marshmallows and peanut butter. and
if you mix marshmallows and peanut butter and put them on a sandwich, it's so good.
It's called a s'more, and I
knew...
Nope,
it's not.
With chocolate, that's, no?
No, chocolate. No, just like a sandwich.
Oh, it doesn't take peanut butter, right?
Yeah, I'm just talking about peanut butter and marshmallow sandwich, because that's like a weird thing that kids do. It's really sugary.
Is it called a fluffernatter?
Yes, there you go.
See, so I know these things, but like we don't have the opposite thing where we create TV shows and ship them out to the States, so you don't get educated about the culture we have. So in
we're really loud, like as far internationally. Let's just like look at our things.
Yeah, and people like the things and they adopt them. We all wear jeans everywhere in the world, if it's cool enough. We don't wear jeans in the Amazon. So why are we talking about this? Because Arturo gave me the opportunity to write for his band. So I had been writing for the sextet for a while. I had been writing for the trio for a while. Mm-hmm. So I picked my favorite song and I arranged it for a big band. And then I did another one because I thought, wait, they don't like this one. So I did two. And they performed both.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the experience of hearing my music performed with a big group like that. And so I decided to start my own big band, Lauren Drea Afro-Peruvian Jazz Orchestra. So a month later, or 2 months later, we had our first gig in the Zinc Bar.
So how long ago was this?
And this was 2014, I think May of 2014. So we had, I think we did May, and then we did July, and then we did September that year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. I wrote a new piece for each time, and we had some great turnout, audience-wise. Like, people were excited to hear this. Peruvians were excited to hear big band.
Well, I mean, like, just the last time that I went, like, I got there, I don't know, 20 minutes late, 30 minutes late, and I walk in, and I'm like, there's just like nowhere to sit.
Yeah.
Except for like this one seat over like by the corner of the bar in the back. Like, that was the only place, and I got it.
I know, and it's so exciting when I see the people. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had good luck with turnout lately, but, you know, Zinc Bar is a small place, so it's easy to fill out. And even when it's full, the bread that comes in isn't really what musicians deserve to get paid for a rehearsal and soundcheck and a gig, you know. So it's always a little bit asking for favors from people.
Well, you know, it's so funny. Like, I know, like, these people who, these younger people are just, not necessarily younger age-wise or, like, younger, like, musician-wise, like, who have young big bands. That's what I'm starting to say. Like, if people believe in the music that they're playing, they're way more likely to do, quote-unquote, a favor. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even for a little bit less money. Like, like, I look at the... When I go... If I go and see your band or, like, someone else's, like, you know...
Liberty or...
Libs or Eco Music,
I've never caught Eco Music yet. Can you believe it? I always have a gig when they have a gig.
They're playing at Roulette on June 28th.
Okay, I'm not anywhere there. I'll do that. Thank you.
But, like, you see these people, like, and they don't necessarily have a huge amount of money to give, but, like, the musicians in all three bands, are like, great, are really, not just like, oh, these are pretty good for what you're doing. No, these are, like, top shelf kind of guys. And but it's about, the you know, the music that you're writing, you know? Mm-hmm. And...
It's a big compliment, actually. Whenever I ask people to do a gig and they say yes, I'm like, ah, oh, they want to play my music? Ah, oh, like little hearts shoot out of my eyes.
That seems dangerous. It's like a strange medical condition.
So I started doing this, and now this year, the Zinc offered us a monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So I took... I actually didn't take the monthly, you know? I was so excited to be offered it, but then I thought about it, and I thought, on average, it costs me, like, financially, it costs me, like, a couple hundred bucks each time, because I do guarantee a minimum, and...
Well, that's
it's often,
so nice to do, for you to do.
Well, I think it's the correct thing to do, though, because when it's not guaranteed, then, you know, I always think about the... Like, my mom's a business owner. She designs, constructs, and sells apartment buildings. So the customer comes, and the customer wants an apartment. So the customer buys an apartment at whatever price is set. And the people who work on building the apartment get paid a salary, and my mom gets paid for designing and constructing a building. Like, nobody there is doing it because they like it.
Yeah.
But I could totally see a scenario where, say, land was scarce. And if you're an architect, it's a big privilege to have your buildings... built.
Mm-hmm.
So architects take down the value of their services just to have their name in a building.
Yeah.
I could also see a scenario where jobs where you get to work outside are scarce. So it becomes a big privilege to be a construction worker. Mm-hmm. So construction workers are willing to do it for less just to have the privilege of, like, doing physical labor. So something similar has happened to music, where it's a big privilege to play music. So people are willing to do it for less.
Well, there's also but it's a privilege, but also you have to take what you can get because you have to pay, you know.
But that's because there's a lot of musicians, and that is because everybody wants to play music, and there's not enough opportunities to play music. There's not as many opportunities to play music as there is musicians who want to play music, especially in New York. Great musicians, you know, and they come in every year to go to Juilliard. From different parts of the country and different parts of the world, and Manhattan School of Music and the New School in NYU.
The nice thing about the Juilliard kids, though, is they come in, they go to Juilliard, and then generally they leave.
That's a nice thing. I wish they'd stay. But such talent in New York.
Yeah.
And so I try to, you know, because the club doesn't have any risk in it.
Mm-hmm,
the club doesn't lose anything. In fact, the club, like Zinc Bar, has a great deal with us where. At least they don't charge us to play there.
Right.
You know? Like, yesterday we played at Bonafide, and they have a deal with... I think they take a percentage or something of the door. It just reflects the kind of city this is, you know, the demand and supply of arts and culture.
Mm-hmm.
So... And the audience gets to see a show that is very expensive for a reduced price because the musicians are willing to play for less, and the band... leader is willing to go under.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a... So, you know, so I didn't take the monthly. I'm doing it... I did it May... I did April, May, June? No, I did... What did I do? March, April, May.
Mm-hmm.
Taking off June, July, August. Coming back September, October, November. Hopefully. If they still want us there. That's the other thing. Yeah. That's why people take the things they're offered. Because what if they found another band?
Yeah.
They don't want us anymore. Oh, no. Yeah. Hopefully we're back there in September. And I think they're going to keep the Afro-Peruvian night going to July and August with a different band. Actually, I think this Friday... I don't know when you air this, but this Friday...
it won't be before this Friday.
All right. Well, they have some really good projects going on.
Yeah. It's like, that's the interesting thing about that specific venue is they do have younger, it's like a decent space that has young, that offers space to younger, or maybe not, they have like more established groups sometimes, and then they have like younger,
younger groups. They're very laissez-faire. I hope that's how you say that. Like, they really...
Yeah. You got it.
Yay! I got something. Somebody yesterday told me that my accent has gotten better. And I was like, oh, I had an accent before?
No. I mean... To me, bitch, you have an accent. To me, like, yeah. it's not my fault. You don't sound like you're from Peru. Like, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. But one thing you talked about from the stage last time you played at Zinc in May was you go to Peru in the summers, right?
Yes, we do. We take
part of the band, part of the audience,
part of the audience. Yeah.
What?
Oh, you thought we took part of the band?
No. Confused.
We took part of... Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, then I should be clear. No, yeah. We take the audience. I mean, we take the band, but the important part is that we take the audience. I mean, everybody takes their band on tour. We take our audience.
Okay, I'm confused, and I don't know if you're like making fun of me.
Everybody should start doing that, because it's fun.
Okay, so like, run me through how this works. Like, is this how many times, like, you've done this before?
Once a year, and I think we've done it 7 or 8 times.
Okay, so what?
Gabriel came up with this idea for the Afro-Peruvian Sextet, because people are always coming up after concerts, like, I'd love to go to Peru, and, you know, and so I was taking the students to Peru, so I already had this background of booking flights and hotels and meals and transportation. So... he came up with the idea of, like, taking the audience to Peru. So from the audience that we had amassed from a few years of touring, we had, like, a big database, and we started selling this trip to Peru to them. And the beautiful thing about Afro-Peruvian jazz is that our audience is, like, mostly retired.
Yep.
And they have... and retired people, they are, like... In Peru, we call it the third youth. Because all of a sudden, they have no responsibilities, they have all the savings, all the time, and it's their time to do whatever it is that they always wanted to do. Huh. So they always wanted to go to Peru, and, you know, all of a sudden they can go to Peru, not just go to Peru, but they can go to Peru with a band.
How cool is that? Like,
yes.
Like, you thought you could only tour with a band when you were, like, 20 and drunk all the time?
Yeah.
Wrong. Now you're 65 and drunk all the time.
Yes.
What's the liquor of choice in Peru?
Pisco.
What is that like?
Pisco. It's a clear liquor made of grape. Ooh. It's very, very finely distilled.
Oh, see, like, some of these things, like, I read about them and then don't necessarily know how to pronounce them and don't know what they sound like.
Yeah, it's very aromatic. And you can drink it straight, or you can drink it mixed into a cocktail. We usually drink in pisco sours, which is lime, simple syrup, egg white, and bitters.
That sounds wonderful.
It is
wonderful.
You just
pump all these old people full of this, and then...
Yes. And they tell you stories, man. Oh, yeah. It's the best. I mean, I can't wait to be that age.
Right. I can't... Me neither. I'm kind of, like, obsessed with being, like... Like,
super healthy now, so that when you're that age, you're like, really
good.
That's shape.
Like, yeah, that's like one of the reasons I keep mentioning this on my recent interviews, but, like, that's one of the reasons I quit smoking. Part of it is because I have to use my lungs, blah blah, whatever.
Right. Blah blah, lungs.
Dude, I really like cigarettes, but it's
cigarettes.
Yes, exactly. Oh, so good. Anyway, but it's like one of those things where it's like, man, can't wait till I'm, like, old and... But as a musician, like, I'm never going to be able to save enough money to do all that stuff, so...
No, but as a musician, you get to do it for free.
Yeah, exactly. Or get paid to...
Yeah.
Or get paid to go to Peru.
That's the wonderful thing about it. I'm sure you will.
We'll see.
I mentioned you're a trombone player, right? Yeah. We need those everywhere. Everywhere has the same problems. Like, you can't... You know, and especially in Peru with all those salsa gigs, it's like trombone fest the time.
You know, there's salsa gigs in my neighborhood.
That's
true. I don't have to go to Peru to get salsa gigs. I just go to my neighborhood.
Nice.
So when are you doing that this summer?
Next summer. This year. Oh. This year we didn't do it because Gabriel organized that, and he had a baby a year and a half ago during the critical time. You know, these things have a cycle, so you have to work hard on them now so that you can have them 2 years later. So, you know, bookings have a cycle, and compositions, everything has to be done before you actually need it. So for Tour Peru, I think the cycle is something like 2 years.
That's a lot.
People need a long time to plan these vacations.
That's true. Well, I mean, even if they're old and don't have anything to do,
Like, they have a lot to do,
More than you expect.
Because
you've got Bridge Club, you've got movies,
they got grandkids to watch. They got grandkids to travel to. Like, you know, they have grandkids in Iowa and grandkids in California and grandkids in Florida. Yeah. And like, oh my God, you got so many kids.
Lots of grandkids in Florida.
And they travel with their friends to Venice. And, you know, they traveled with their friends to Brazil. Like, Peru is never the first destination. Somebody who comes to Peru has usually already been... to Europe and to Egypt and to China and to, you know, what's next? Well, you know, let's just go to Peru. Machu Picchu, whatever.
I actually turned down a tour of China this year. I was like,
why? What?
I wouldn't want to go to China. Not with that group.
Well, so.
Nah, you know.
I guess you're popular.
No, it's the only time I've ever been offered a tour of anything, and I just didn't want to do it.
Well, okay. It says a lot about the group, but yeah, don't tour with a group. Who's gonna be mean? And this fall we have a lot of touring with the Sextet again, mm-hmm. which we gave up because, you know, we were all busy. The guitar player just had a baby too.
Man,
yeah.
So much. Well, the Sextet was not like was that an ensemble that you built or was
that? It's an ensemble that Gabriel built, okay. But it's been the same four people in the Sextet for like 10 years.
Well,
so it's kind of the band we have.
Jesus plays in the Sextet.
Sometimes. I saw him when
sometimes.
He sat in once.
Okay, that was just the one time I happened to see him in it then.
Yeah. but he was great in the Sextet. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we get ideas.
You actually hate him, don't you? You hate Jesus.
I love Jesus.
I'm going to text him and be like...
I love Jesus and I love Shana.
He doesn't listen to this, man. He ain't got time for that.
who listens to this? You?
It's just me and my mom.
Other podcast people.
No, I get...
people probably listen to it.
I get between 550 and 600 eyeballs on the podcast every week.
That's great.
But it's not always, every week is not the same group of people. So I don't know. But at the same time, iTunes and my server don't provide accurate numbers. So I honestly have a really specific idea of how many people listen. So who knows? Could be like 1,000. It could be like 2.
People might start recognizing you for your voice.
Right.
You go on tour to like Ohio and you go into a bodega and you say, can I have a pack of Marlboro and a Coke? Are you Dan Dunford?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly
And you love happen. Cigarettes.
No. Yeah, but I don't, it's very specific. It's unfiltered Lucky Strikes.
Okay.
Anyway, that's not important. So like how much like of this writing stuff do you actually have time to do? Like with all of the things that you do.
What happens is that I'll be practicing, mm-hmm. and I do this thing where I practice a phrase and then I transpose it, not to all 12 keys, but to all 7 degrees of a tonality.
Right.
I pick the steps and the directions randomly. So I go to random.org, and I enter number 1 through 7, and I pick the first 5, and then I enter numbers 1 and 2, and 1 is up and 2 is down. So I'll come up with a phrase...
I can't tell if you're doing a really elaborate joke or not.
No, this is true.
Wow.
So sometimes the phrases are pretty.
Huh.
And sometimes when I'm like taking them from the first grade to the second grade to the third grade, it's like they start sounding like a melody, so I'll write them down. So every week I'll start a couple compositions that way. And sometimes if they stick with me, if something sticks with me for long enough, I'll finish it. So it's a weird survival of the fittest kind of thing, crazy. Where like all these ideas come up, but only a few stick, and if you stick, you'll become a tune. And
it's like big band composition by way of like John Cage.
No. It sounds like that, but it's actually
no. I don't mean like the finished product. I mean like the initial process.
The finished product is very friendly.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about the initial process.
the last thing that I got was 1572. Going up, up, and down, so it was like, da, 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 and that already sounds like a bass line.
Mm-hmm.
Da, 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 da.
And then you get the audience to clap da, with da, you, da, and then it's da, great.
Da, da, and there's a melody on top of that. Mm-hmm. Da, and then it changes chord.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sticking with awesome. Me already for a couple of weeks, so it might become a tune. And the Sextet's putting out another album in a year, so I need to write about five. I need to write about five good ones for that. And five good ones means at least 20.
And then they can pick from...
It's a numbers game. Yeah, right? Yeah, you just have to have enough in the pipeline so that a few tunes are nice.
I mean, like, when you're doing stuff for the trio or the sextet or the band, like, do you change your approach, or is it just like, you know, the origins and the process are the same, it's just the amount of instruments that you end up with is different?
The trio hasn't been written for in a while, because mm-hmm. The trio plays mostly traditional Peruvian music, like the audience wants that, okay. You know, so I plug in some of my compositions when they fit, but and traditional Peruvian music is so beautiful and I miss it so much that whenever I have this trio gigs, I just enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
I just take the ride and like play 3 hours of valses that have been around for 100 years.
Wait, I mean,
and the melodies are strong. That's why they survive, you know.
Well, and they get passed down from community to community. And
yes,
it's like the oral tradition, oral tradition.
And they stand the test of time, mm-hmm. and it's a pleasure to play them.
What are the like traditional songs about?
Missing somebody you love, somebody you love hurting you very much, somebody you love so much they want them to be. Very hurt, but never die. Actually, this is the lyrics. Que sufra mucho, pero que nunca muera. Let her suffer a lot, but let her never die. Because I love her still.
That's horrible, awesome.
Yes. And all the lyrics of this traditional music, they always mention death at some point. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, there's this song that is super happy. It's like, María Delia. No, 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 te amé con gran locura. María Delia, la mujer idolatrada. Me atrajo su nana, I don't remember the lyrics.
Sounds nice, sounds happy.
Porque sin ti la vida acabaría. And then there's like, I remember the love that we swore each other. It was the happiest day of our lives. I thought that you would be with me forever. And then you turn on me, bitch. Oh, God, take my life away. It's worth nothing without María Delia. Señor, quítame mejor la vida.
It's like,
no, don't take María Delia away from me. Take my life first.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah. And all these songs are like that. Malpaso is like the favorite song of everyone. And the lyrics start, you go around telling people that you're unlucky. and that's the reason for your failure.
But
people know better. And they're very insensitive. And they just know that you're just not that much. You know, and if you ever remember me, remember how much you loved me and how much I loved you, and you treated me wrong. People love singing along to that.
Yeah.
Recuerda que yo, and then the audience go, te quise tanto.
Well, like you said, I mean, they're really like these strong melodies. I think in some ways subtlety is overrated. Like,
yes.
You want to have subtlety, like, because like, you know, and when you're talking about like Broadway musicals or like old
mm-hmm.
Shakespearean plays mm-hmm. or classic old movies, like it's funny when you look at movies nowadays, but like modern independent films or whatever, it's like all about like these shadings and these subtleties
mm-hmm.
and you know, some of them stick around for a while, but then, you know, you think about a movie like Casablanca or Gone with the Wind, and it's all like, right. You go back, I mean, there are some subtleties, but a lot of the strokes are very broad.
Yeah.
And very, it's like these very, like, huge basic building blocks of story, yeah. And these are the movies and the kind of things that stick around forever. It's, and you know.
Yeah.
Folk tunes.
And they've been around for hundreds of years, these themes.
Yeah.
And they're like part of us.
And everyone can relate. Like, ideally, everyone can relate.
Yeah. It's hard when you're writing music not to write something that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's pretty, it usually already exists. So it's about, you know, how are you making it your own?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
With random.org, that's how you make it your own.
Well, you know, and random, even randomly, like, the ones that stick with you are going to be the ones that are already...
Well, I mean, but there's a difference between, like, sure, maybe this kind of thing sort of semi-exists somewhere before, like, but...
Mm-hmm. And then random.org, like, well, because a random selection of numbers will always have a repeat.
Yeah,
and if you have a repeat of a node, you have tonality.
Yeah.
And if you have tonality, like, there's nothing random about it.
Yeah, well, someone's written in B-flat before, I promise.
Yeah, and somebody really liked going down by degrees and up mm-hmm. a jump, or down a jump and up by degrees.
But, you know, like, but no one's done it. Like, your personality might be unique and how you approach it. So
yeah, exactly.
So what are you doing with music this summer?
This summer? Well, we're going to the international... Well, we're playing next Friday with... you know what I'm doing that's exciting?
What are you doing that's exciting? Yeah, tell me about what
Renato
you're doing.
Renato D is a piano player from my band. From from my band. He plays in many bands. Yeah. But he's my piano player. he's a sweetheart. He's perfect for my music. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. He's perfect for Afro-Peruvian music, even though he's Portuguese. And we tease him that he's Hispanic. That he's Latin American. You know, actually, I heard a sports commentator say this the other day. Like... you know, Portugal was playing a soccer game, mm-hmm. and the commentator said, yeah, those South Americans. Dude, Portugal's in Europe.
Well, but also, like, I mean, what's the biggest Portuguese-speaking country in the world? It's not Portugal.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I mean, but...
And they sound so much better.
What, the Brazilians?
The Brazilians in Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Sorry to all Portuguese.
Well, were you watching the Euro 2016? Is that who said it?
Yeah, I don't know. But the so what was I talking about before I started thinking
it's
about
the
Brazilian
accent? Your pianist.
Yes. Okay. So he's picked up that monthly Afro-Peruvian night in Zinc Bar, mm-hmm. with his girlfriend, who's a great singer from Peru, Maria Quintanilla. And he wanted to do one of my songs, but it needed lyrics. So I'm working on these lyrics. Mm-hmm. I'm working on lyrics for Junia Rua, which is a ballad. And so, again, you know, I write 8 versions so I can pick a good one.
Yeah.
And they work on it. So now I have 8 versions and I'm just comparing line by line. Line by line, I'm just picking the best line, you know. Decision making is so hard. So yeah, so that's exciting. And then the following week, the sextet's going to the International Pittsburgh Jazz Festival. And then, no, the previous week.
Some weeks. Gosh. There are weeks.
The same week?
Don't worry about it. You can give me specifics and I can put them when I...
Yeah. Okay. And then there's another gig with the sextet in July. And there's some other like interesting commitments this summer. Mm-hmm. But mostly just hanging out. playing with people who call me up. Yeah.
That's...
And then in the fall, we're touring a lot with the sextet, and I have to write a lot of music now, mm-hmm. again, because we're putting on an album. So thank goodness I have a lot of music already halfway done.
Yeah. It was interesting, like, and I've been talking to people about it, but like, I was playing a lot for like 4 or 5 months straight, mm-hmm. and then the end of May hit, and starting in the middle of May, I've had a few things, mm-hmm. like... had a few things a few weeks here and there where I've been busy, but it's mostly just been like,
yeah, summer's a good time for extra practicing, musical projects,
practicing,
moisturizing,
lying and watching,
tweezing.
Yeah, like,
I'm busy, you guys.
I'm so busy. I'm like, I'm sitting at home and watching. I don't even like soccer, and I was watching
growing,
like,
my nails.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's nothing to do.
I'm actually growing my buttercups.
There you go.
Yeah. Taller.
So, you know,
and that's not a euphemism.
Yeah, it sounded weird. Well, it's okay because like I had already started recording initially when you were talking about your buttercups. So, all right. It works.
There's like so many cool things that, like, euphemism, you know, like I'm washing my delicates.
Oh dear.
I know,
girl,
right?
Girl.
English is great.
Anyway. Laura, thank you for
What?
No. We're gonna stop. We're gonna end with that.
We can't stop there. No.
Well, yeah, if you wanted to end on something else, you have to come up with something very very inspiring to say about music, and then we'll end.
No, I have nothing inspiring to say about music. Except, you know, we all do it because we love it, and look at all we put in it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's killing all of us, and we still do it.
Yes, that's the best place to end. Thank you for doing this. We're done.